Welcome to the Recruiter Startup Podcast. My name is Dulta Doherty, and in this podcast series, I will be speaking to investors, advisors, entrepreneurs, and recruiters who are based all over the world, and we will be discussing how to set up, operate, and scale a world-class recruitment company. Today, I'm speaking with Lloyd Gordon. He is the CEO of Focus Cloud. They're an ERP recruitment firm, and they're only based just up the road from me in Gatwick. He also has an office in London, and he talked to me about his plans for world domination. He is not messing about. He's got up to over 20 people within the first few years of business. He's got the background, he's got the chops for it, and he's going to scale this business to over 100 people over the next few years. He's filling jobs all around the world, and he's confident that he's got the formula and the secret sauce to make it all work. So I hope you all enjoy this one. Some interesting stuff about Lloyd. He was trying to be a professional footballer. That didn't work out. Got into sales. And then, like a lot of us, the wonderful world of agency recruitment opened its arms to him. And he got good at it. And then he got really good at it. And then he got so good he had to set up his own recruitment firm. And now he's trying to make other people good at it. So hope you all learned something from this. Interesting wee business he has. You know, doing a lot of contract work around the world out of his central hub in Gatwick. So he'll win major projects, get them exclusive, fill multiple roles within one niche. And they're becoming the expert within Workday, which is the space that they work in. And that there for me really works. You know, when you've got a flexible approach to location and you're a real niche expert in one thing, you find that those candidates will be mobile. They'll work for multiple jobs, and you can start moving people project to project. And that's what they've done. They've done it well. And he's really passionate about growing his recruitment business, as you'll hear. And I hope you enjoy.
Hi, Walter.
Hi, Lloyd. Is this your broadcasting debut?
It certainly is.
Have you been up all night preparing for this interview?
Absolutely not.
That's exactly how I like people. Completely unprepared and unaware.
Completely unprepared. This is going to go. A little bit stressed with the day that's happened so far. All good, all positive though. Nothing's gone wrong. So just not enough time.
That's what you get for trying to take over the world.
I know. Yeah. I wish someone had told me that before I started.
So I want to jump into how you got into recruitment and all that jazz, but I saw that you picked up 1,000 roles in Paris the other day.
Yeah.
How'd you manage that? What's the crack with that?
Well, 100, it was actually 120 roles.
120 roles.
Yeah. Yeah, that's not also unheard of for us, because we specialize in this product, as you know, Workday, HCM and financials. You know, we only do that. So when we go to organizations and we obviously ask them for exclusivity, they're talking to us about what their plans are for the next 12 months. So, you know, these particular organizations that I spoke to and met, that's what I come away with. So it was a good day.
So are you? So firstly, is Workday like a little cousin of SAP or something like that?
I wouldn't say it's a little cousin. I would say it's basically a spin-off from PeopleSoft.
From PeopleSoft, okay.
Yeah. So there's a long story.
Oracle owned PeopleSoft now, don't they?
Yeah. There's a long story of how Workday was founded. And basically Workday have been in the market, you know, for around 10 years, I'd say, 10, 11 years. About 6 years ago, they penetrated Europe. So it's a growing market. And it's starting to outperform, actually. It's starting to outperform Oracle HCM and Oracle Financials and SAP.
You would say that, though, wouldn't you?
Well, you know, do you know what? It's interesting because I'm actually an ex Oracle and ex SAP recruiter.
Yeah, I can see that.
So, I mean, my company does Workday, and we only specialize in Workday. But I have an allegiance to that product, and my whole company is built around that product. And if that product does well, my company does well. But I also take an objective view. You know, so if I believe that, you know, if I believed that the SAP or Oracle was outperforming the product that we've chosen, which is Workday, then my company's called Focus Cloud. You know, we can easily diverse into different areas.
Sure, you can. Now, jump me into how you got into recruitment. It's quite a while ago.
It was, yeah, 16 years ago, something like that. So do you want the long story? Do you want
Long story. Let's go into some of it, because it'll tell us why you're trying to take over the world now.
Okay. Well, that starts from childhood.
Let's not go there.
Yeah. Well, the whole take over the world thing is I think it's important that you hear that. So it's basically down to my father.
Okay.
My father always told me that I needed to be the best at whatever I do. And, you know, I've done various things, you know, that I've specialized in over the time of my life. And, you know, football was one of them. So I used to play quite a high level of football. Well, I did my work experience when I was 15. I did my work experience at Reading Football Club.
Okay.
And so Reading, you know, where normal people go and do some filing or something like that, I was doing pre-season training with Reading.
Oh,
and as a result of that...
What year was that?
Sorry?
What year was that?
You're asking me. So ballpark. I'm 40, just 41 now. So when I was 15, so what, 36, 26 years ago?
All right. So before the Premier League?
No, the Premier League, I believe the Premier League was around. Premier League was around, yeah. Yeah, but Reading wasn't in the Premier League at the time. They got promoted the following season. But when I was there was when Mick Gooding was there and Shaka Hislop was the goalkeeper.
Okay.
And so I always tried to be the best at whatever I did. And, you know, sometimes I achieved that and sometimes I didn't. But, you know,
how did you handle not making it as a footballer?
Quite badly. Because when I was at school, I mean, I did very well at school. But, you know, I had no intention of using anything that I learned at school. So I was pretty much doing well at school because my father would have kicked my ass if I didn't. And that's why I got good grades. But I had no intention of using anything that I learned at school. In fact, you know, myself and my French teacher, during my school years, we had an agreement that I would sit at the back of the class with my headphones on, you know, the old Walkmans. Yeah, Walkmans with the cassettes. So I used to sit at the back of my French class because I thought, well, I'm never going to need to learn to speak French.
Last week.
Yeah, very badly. yeah, and it's funny because when you're younger, you don't think, no one ever thinks about, I'm going to be a recruiter. You know, I'm going to be a recruiter when I get older and that's what I'm going to do. No one ever thinks that. So I was thinking to myself, well, I'm going to be a footballer. And that obviously didn't work out for me. But, you know, I'm a recruiter and we work on an international basis. So I have teams
Did you go straight into recruitment from football?
No, I didn't. No. So I what I did is I went to college, and this is pretty much how I started in recruitment. So I was taking myself through college and I used to mop floors at Gatwick Airport. Of a night time. So I used to work nights, go to college in the day.
This sounds like Goodwill Hunting.
Yeah, something like that.
were you solving equations on the way in the runway and stuff?
No, this is actually a true story. So my story, I was mopping floors. I used to serve coffee of a night time at Costa Coffee at Gatwick Airport. Then I used to go to college in the day and then I'd go back to work in the evening. And I always had this idea that I was going to earn lots and lots of money. And what age was I at the time? Probably, 18, 19. And obviously my football career, I was still playing football, but obviously my professional aspirations were over at that point. So I needed to earn lots of money, and I wasn't earning lots of money at the time. I was earning like £6 an hour or something.
Was that to justify your father's need for you to be the best?
I was trying to take myself to college and make sure I can, you know, afford my car and things like that, and just support myself. So that's why I was doing what I was doing. I was, like I said, I was serving coffee and mopping the floors.
Yeah.
And we used to have a local paper called the Herald. One night I looked in the local paper and there was an 0800 number and it said, earn £1,000 a week. So I was like, well, I'm earning 200 or something like that at the moment. I'd like to earn £1,000 a week. That was more than the assistant manager and the manager at Costa Coffee at the time. So I rung the number the following day and I went for the interview. They called me along for the interview. Turned out to be a double glazing company. So a company that sells double glazing called Weathersill Windows. And I turn up and I get the job. And I started the following week, actually. No notice or anything. So they said, we want you to go down to Wales and learn sales. So you can't sell this product without having some sales training. So the following week, I was in Wales for, I think it was a week, learning how to sell. I think I had the natural...
A good brainwashing session, though.
Oh, the brainwashing session was, you know, it was ridiculous what they do. You know, the sales training that you receive going through something like that, direct sales, is fantastic. Mm. And they, yeah, absolutely. You touched on the point of brainwashing. I mean, they brainwashed me that window was the best and I didn't know any different. So when I came into the field, you know, I believed 150% that that window that I was selling in people's houses of a nighttime was the best window on the market. And there was nothing that touched it because they brainwashed me to believe that.
Yeah. Recruitment firms are good at that too.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you need to believe in your product, right? If you don't believe in the company that you work for, As I've grown up and become a little bit more mature, I need to believe in the product. I genuinely need to believe in it in order for me to be able to sell it.
I've said this before when I was working for Robert Walters, I thought people that worked for Hayes and S3 were actually sick. like there was something genetically wrong with them that they would end up in that situation.
Yeah. But I think you know, look at the S3 companies. I mean, they produce some of the most successful recruiters out of that brand that any recruitment have produced.
You know, but definitely produced the most successful group of business leaders.
Yeah.
And we've had tons on this podcast that have started their career in that mold and have gone on to take on some of the biggest recruitment firms in the world.
Yeah. You know, so their training absolutely works, you know.
So you graduated from the old window sales into recruitment.
Yeah.
So you got into SAP recruitment straight away, ERP recruitment?
No, I didn't. So I did the window sales for about a year or so. And what happened was a gentleman that owned a recruitment business, a local recruitment business, kept on coming into the office.
Mm.
And my name was always top. So in the first 4 weeks, you're treated as a rookie. So I won rookie of the week every week for the first 4 weeks. And then on my fourth week, actually, I was thinking, well, just because I'm a rookie, it doesn't necessarily mean that I can't win the salesperson of the week, because you had two awards. You had rookie and then salesperson. And these salespeople would been doing this job selling windows for a long, long time. And I'd been doing it for 3 weeks. And I thought, wouldn't it be cool if I could win that in my fourth week? And that's what I did. I won it in my fourth week. So everyone was kind of gobsmacked that this little 18, 19-year-old had come in after 3 weeks and smashed these experienced double glazing salespeople. But double glazing was a really good training ground for me. You know,
if
you
can do sales.
Yeah, it was hard sales. It was, you know, if you watch Salesman from Hell on TV, that's what I used to do. So the lead was already set up. I'd go into someone's house, let's say 8 o'clock at night. they would be expecting me to be there to give them a quote, which would last for 12 months. And I wasn't there to give them a quote for 12. I was there to give them a quote for 12 months, but that quote was a big quote. And then I was taught to close there and then at a much lower rate, a discounted rate. It was called a feature
home. And if they leave, they're not going to get the good deal.
The following day, the way that they taught me to sell was the following day, if you call me tomorrow, then it's 10 grand. If you take it right now, it's 4.
Yeah.
So
I was trained the same way in gym
and
sales.
I believed that. I believed that because that's what they brainwashed me to think. But, you know, realistically, you know, if they'd have called up 5 days later and said, do you know that thing, you know, you said we would, we know, you know, I kind of came to...
I think now with the internet, it's harder to do those things.
Absolutely it is. You know? And my mum had a visit from a double glazing salesman the other day, actually. And I was like, no, you're not buying those. And he did the same technique, actually. He tried to sell her a door, said 2,000. And if you do it now, it's 1,300. And she just said, no, I need to speak to my son. So I was like, mom, that's what I used to do.
did this chap who owned a recruitment firm, he was in snooping out for salespeople, was he?
Yeah, he was. He was. So my name was always top of the leaderboard. And he said to me, you should do recruitment. So I was getting a little bit cheesed off with the long hours. You know, I was coming out of people's houses at 12 o'clock at night. Literally, the leads, the sales process for that was supposed to be an hour, but literally you was in there for 3 hours at a minimum. So I was coming out of people's houses at 11, 12, 1 o'clock in the morning. And my girlfriend at the time thought I was having an affair, which I wasn't. I was just working. So
sure you
weren't. I thought to myself, maybe I should try and do something different. That's what I did. So I went into recruitment, and this is strange how this happened as well. When I started in recruitment, I did, it was actually an industrial recruitment company. So we used to place pretty much anyone with arms and legs who walked in off the street, we would have them out at a DVD manufacturing business the following day. And then I said to him, I don't really want to be messing around on industrial anymore. I want to do something a bit cool come through. I want to do something a bit more interesting. So I opened the local paper and started calling around all the adverts that were in the paper. Sorry, that's my Apple Watch. And
just stick around, do not disturb.
Give me 2 seconds, sorry. There you go. Aeroplane mode. So I called this business and I went into my pitch, my sales pitch. Sorry, daughter. Keep getting calls come through.
That's okay. We'll edit it out.
All right. So I made a sales call and the guy listened and took me through the whole pitch. And then he said, do you know we're a recruitment company? And it was a business called Mansell Recruitment Group. And I said, no, I didn't know you as a recruitment company, but, you know, I'm a recruiter and I wanted to try and help you fill this vacancy, not knowing anything about recruitment. And he said, look, we're a recruitment company, but I like your pitch. And when you get cheesed off with what you're doing, why don't you come see me? And then a week later, I went over there and went for the interview, and the rest is history.
Right. I see you worked there for about 5 years.
I did.
So is this the second time you've tried to set up your own recruitment business?
The second time I've set up what? So Focus Cloud, yes. Focus Cloud is my second business.
Great. Walk us through the first one and maybe some of the lessons learned.
I think lessons learned was to be 100% focused on what you're trying to do from the first one. So the first one I did was, 10, 11 years ago?
Just before the recession.
Yeah, if not longer than that, actually. And I partnered up with someone I'm very good friends with now, still. And it just didn't work. We used to do the construction and engineering market.
Right. And that led you to joining Maximus IT.
It certainly did. Yeah. So what I did is I left Maximus. So after my first 5 years of recruitment, I left Mansell because I wanted to. And I actually didn't start my own business at that point. I went to one of their biggest competitors. Yeah. And I did that because I wanted to prove to myself that I could do what I did at Mansell somewhere else from scratch before I took the plunge. And I did that, did really well there, stayed there for about a year. And then Steve Mansell called me up and said, I'm starting a recruitment business in the city. You told me that you wanted your own recruitment company. How would you feel about having 33% of this business? And I kind of thought, MD, all I thought was my business card with MD on it. So we did that together.
Which was that? Which company?
That was an organization called Big Red Seven. So it's not actually on my LinkedIn profile.
Okay.
It was a recruitment business, which is why it's not on my LinkedIn profile. I stayed there for about a year, I guess, 9 months. And I hated rec to rec.
It's a tough game, hey?
Yeah, I mean, it was never...
It's not as easy as 18.
My thoughts... Well, actually, I found it was.
you didn't scale your business in rec to rec?
No. Well, the issue I had was the ability to make money. I wanted to be a multimillionaire.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you don't have contract revenue, you can't sell your business for high amounts. And with a rec-to-rec business, it's pure perm, of course. So I quickly realized that this is not going to make me a multimillionaire. So I did talk to Steve at the time and say we should probably diverse into IT or technical engineering, whatever it is. And he didn't want to set up a business in competition with Mansell, of course. So I ended up leaving that organization. And that's when I did the business with my friend Ben. Which didn't quite work, and it's totally my fault why that didn't work.
Why is it totally your fault? What type of mistakes did you make?
Type of mistakes. I just don't think that I was. I think number one, I'm the sort of person that, you know, with Big Red Seven, I like to believe that I was pretty much in control of the business with Big Red Seven. You know, I had two business partners at the time, but they were pretty much silent business partners. So they were just the money men, and I was able to steer that business and grow that business how I wanted to, but then I didn't like the sector. So you know, as I said, it was never going to make me a multimillionaire. With the business after that, Corrigan Bentley, I wasn't in control of that. I was a 49% shareholder of that business. I didn't feel as though I could make my own decisions as such, and I wasn't really focused at the time to do.
Tell me this: why did you agree to 49%?
I think I wanted to get back to engineering and IT so much that it didn't really matter to me what the percentage was. I just wanted to be a business owner in a sector that I really wanted to do. And you know, Ben wanted to start a business on the side of his current business, which he didn't have technical and engineering, and that's what we did.
Okay.
Yeah, you're taking me back. You're taking me back a long time now.
So you went right back into joining another firm, Maximus IT.
Yeah. So basically, from my rec to rec days. A lot of money doing rec to rec, and there tended to be a few businesses that I'd done lots and lots of business with, and even though I wasn't doing recruitment to recruitment anymore, I still maintained those relationships with those businesses. So when I decided, look, I don't really think this is going to work out for me, I called those three companies and said I'm looking. And I knew they was interested in my profile from when I used to do business with them. There was only three companies that, you know, I had the respect for, let's say, to go and join. And I knew this would be my step, let's say, into the IT market. And one of the things that I'd noticed as well, so I'm a, you know, at the time I was an engineering recruiter, engineering and technical. I'm placing lots and lots of people, you know, from my Mansell days and my CBS Butler days. And the fees were like 3.5K. And, you know, contract placement. You'd be lucky if you get £3 an hour. That was what I did. And I did really well at it. But then when I started doing recruitment to recruitment, and I'm speaking to other recruiters and placing other recruiters and asking them, how much do you earn? How much do you bill and how much do you earn? And I remember one particular guy told me he was earning £14,000-£15,000 a month. And that was like astronomical money to me at the time. It was astronomical. Mm. Because, you know, in technical engineering, you know, even if you're a great recruiter, you know, your best year is what, 300-400K, which is fantastic in that market. You know, whereas I'm then talking to recruiters in the IT sector thinking, blimey, I'm as good as you and you're earning 40. I've never earned 14 grand in a month. So I've done really well, but my best earnings, I think at Mansell was about 5K in a month. And it was team commissions, which didn't really work for me because I usually did the team target myself. So I'd never had those astronomical earnings. So I saw that as an opportunity to get myself into the IT market, and that's what I did. And I went to three interviews. I got offered three jobs. I ended up opting for Maximus IT at the time.
And you stayed there for an awful long time, eh?
I did. I was there for almost 9 years. I think it was 9 years, just over 9 years.
What could they have done to keep you?
Depends how much you're going to share on the podcast. I hope your editing's good.
Go on, tell me.
Yeah, I mean, there is a story behind this. You know, they could have, what they could have done to keep me is they could have given me a larger share of the business without me having to scratch and fight for it. That's what you could have done.
It's always down to pride and respect.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if you'd have asked me this 3 years ago when I started Focus Cloud, I probably would have given you a different answer to that. Mm. You know, when you leave a business, and in certainly in the way that I did with Maximus, you know, no hard feelings at all. But at the time, there was very hard feelings because it was the way that it was done. You know, from my point of view, I think I did everything that I could possibly do, which was all above board. Mm. But I think that
I think I've worked with somebody you probably employed.
Yeah, who's that?
Shailen Mystery.
Shailen Mystery used to be my senior resourcer, and he helped. You know, so my best ever billings in the Oracle market was about 750, maybe 800,000 in a year, and Shailen Mystery was my resourcer.
There you go.
Yeah.
So he sat next to me at Robert Walters in Australia.
Oh wow! Okay, so you're the guy that took him out.
No, I was just a senior consultant. He came on.
I think he mentioned your name to me.
Is that right?
Yeah, small world. Shailen Mystery is fantastic. He really helped. You know, because when I started at Maximus, I was an engineering and technical recruiter. Mm. You know, and someone said Oracle to me. I'm like, well, what's that? I didn't particularly know about IT. You know, I wasn't IT literate. You know, ERP to me was ERP, you know. So how am I going to do this? And I knew that there was really good recruiters, and I wanted to be the best. I knew there was really good recruiters in this market, so I was just focused on becoming number one. And that's you know, what I did. But it was a steep learning. That I noticed as well when I was doing Oracle, and the same for SAP, and the same now as well, is you are recruiting against, or you're competing against as good as people as you. You know, so the way that they do things is as good as I could do. So I had to do something different.
When you set up your own business, What stuff did you bring with you? What did you leave behind?
Well, I left behind most of my network. So when I decided to to set up Focus Cloud, I promised my boss at the time that I wouldn't take anything with me, and I didn't take anything with me. I set up Focus with nothing. You know, on day one, I had no clients. On day one, I had no candidates. So it was literally from scratch. I know a lot of people, they set up recruitment companies and they've taken X, Y, and Z with them. So it gives them a little bit of a foothold. But that wasn't the case for me. It was literally on day one. And I actually started this business at Steve Mansell's offices. So the first guy that I worked for, the first real recruitment job I had for 5 years, I called him up and I said, I'm starting a business. I need an office. Can I use your office? And he said, yes. So he really helped me. He really helped me from day one with lots of advice and things like that as well. And I sat there, I sat there on day one, and then I had my CRM, and my CRM had nothing on it. And I thought, shit, what have I done?
Let's jump into some specifics here. Firstly, why did you choose the niche that you went into?
Well, the business was called Focus ERP.
Okay.
So
did you fall into Workday or?
No. So towards the end of my tenure at Maximus, I'd played around with Workday. I'd placed a few people and I'd been hearing a lot about this new product that was coming to Europe called Workday. But, at the time, in my last few years, I was a £1 million plus a year, was 1.5 million.
Yeah, I used to hear about you from Shailen, all right.
Yeah, I mean, I did really well. I'm really fortunate. I did very, very well in recruitment. I did very well at Maximus.
Did you put a few pounds aside?
Yeah, I did. And, I'm not going to go into, what happened, when I left and what put me under pressure. Well, let's just say that I was under financial pressure and I shouldn't have been under financial pressure. When you leave a business, I believe that you're owed, you should get paid everything you're owed me. So to start Focus with X amount of pounds, and I didn't have X amount of pounds to start Focus with. And I had to put my house on the line. I took a loan secured against my house to start this business, and that shouldn't have been the case.
I suppose for anybody listening, you're probably not like the nature, just from my brief understanding of what you guys did through Shailen, you filled a lot of contracts. So in multiple locations and all the rest. So you would have need more money than just setting up for a little perm business, right?
Yeah. I mean, I can do perm as well as I know how to do perm as well as I know how to do contract. I'm one of the lucky ones, but I didn't know what I was going to do. The truth of the matter is I didn't know what I was going to do, what I was going to focus on when I started Focus. I just knew it was going to be an ERP company, ERP company with the technologies that I'd learned over all those years. So Focus ERP started off being an SAP, an Oracle, and a Workday recruiter. And those were the areas that we focused on. I didn't have any focus of whether this was going to be contract or perm. Chances of me leaving Maximus meant that it didn't really matter what it was. It wasn't perm or contract recruitment. It was get money quick. Otherwise, you're going to lose your house and, your family are going to be out on the street. And that was how it was for me. It was.
How did you go get that money?
Well, I took a loan from the bank. Yeah. I had to put my house on the line for it as well. When I was planning to start Focus, so there was a 3 week period. There was supposed to be 3 months, but it ended up being 3 weeks for whatever reason. I'd been planning what I was going to do to plan to start Focus ERP in January. And in reality, I started it in September 2015. And that was 3 weeks after I'd handed my notice in. So there wasn't a period really of planning and you know, working out. I just didn't balls have to the wall, that luxury.
Get some money in.
It was, you know, I lost my job at Maximus. I lost my job because I handed my notice in. And I was very open and honest about me wanting to set up a business, which, you know, in effect was a competitor, but not with any of their customers. And I'm not the sort of person that will tell you something different to your face and then leave and then go and do something exactly what I told you I wasn't going to do. That's not me. Yeah. So I said, this is what I'm going to do. And there are a million customers in this market, in those three sectors. So if you want to try and stop me from doing those, then go ahead. And that's why it ended the way it did. Anyway, so what I did is I quickly, whilst I was planning on what I was going to do with Focus, I thought, I've never really run a business. I've never had to run a business. I've run a desk really well, but because you are a £1 million plus biller does not necessarily mean you're going to set up a very successful recruitment company.
No, it doesn't. It usually means you're a greedy, hungry animal.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, that's how it is. It's like that. But so I think the smartest decision that I made was to sell a bit of this business to someone who did know how to run a recruitment company. I think that's the smartest decision I made before I actually started it. So I had.
When you say you sold a little bit, what does that mean?
Well, I went to see someone. So first of all, you know, I knew I was going to set up with. Well, actually, I went to talk to.
Who
Steve.
Is that person?
Who is that person?
Yeah.
It's a guy called Walid Suki.
Okay.
So Walid was the founder of Accountancy Editions. So anything that he's still our chairman.
Ah, very
still
good.
very much involved in this business, Focus Cloud, and he's been with us from the start of this journey. And you know, I went to him and said, I'm going to start this company, and he knew me from my Mansell day, so he knew I could deliver. But he had no idea what I'd done in between, and he took a leap of faith, and he bought a percentage of it, a 5% share, with cash, of course. But you know, the cash aside, the smartest thing I did before I set this business up was getting him involved, because
so basically you were buying an advisor for future.
Yeah, I was buying someone who knew how to run a recruitment company, had been through all of the crap that you go through. I needed someone to say, I didn't know that I needed this, but now when I think back,
who told you to go out and find him and do that?
I decided that myself. I know what my capabilities are, and yes, if you stick me on the desk and you give me a phone, and I don't care whether it's a cold desk or not, I'm going to make that desk very, very successful. But that's not a business. That's not a business. That is a desk. And there's all sorts of things that happen. All sorts of things that have happened to me in the last 3 years. And without him being around and saying, this is normal, you know, just that
it's a nice bit of self-reflection, though.
Yeah, just that person who's already been there and done it. You know, if you
but it's interesting that you were able to pinpoint your own frailties.
Yeah, it's my weakness. It was my improvement point, right? You know, I don't know what I don't know. I know how to run a desk, but I want to build this business to 100 people. So just
because you want to sell it, because you want to be a multimillionaire.
No, not because of that. I got different reasons why I'm doing this. It's not because of money. You know, don't forget, many, many years ago when I was doing Rec to Rec, that was my ambitions. And when I was at Maximus, it was never to become, you know, very rich, which I was earning a lot of money at Maximus. But that does not stay. Once you earn a certain amount of money, what do you do with it? You know, there's loads of money floating around in recruitment. There's some very rich people who still run desks on a day-to-day basis. And yeah, well, it has to be something. It has to be something different. Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's for me.
It's about the game. I'm sure you'll invest in other people, or you'll do that. But surely you set up a company and you grow to 100 so you can exit, so you can then do the next thing. Like, rarely you'll see somebody who get a business grow to 100 without the need to selling it.
Well, you know, it's 3 years on now, and we're a multi-million pound turnover business, and we're we've just had every year. So in the first year, we made a very healthy profit in our first year from scratch.
Fantastic.
In our second year, we doubled our profit in our second year. And we've just had our accounts done for our third year, and we've doubled our profit again. So it's not about the money for me. It's not that. And if anyone ever does this job or ever starts a business for money, I think that's not going to last that long.
Mm. Like you're currently at, are you at about 25 billers?
Yeah, we've got 26 people, including our back office team.
So, how would you describe your company in terms of other recruitment agencies out there? Like, if somebody said, what type of recruitment agency do you have? What would you say?
Well, we're obviously very specialized. So, after the first year, I decided to drop the SAP side of things and drop the Oracle side of things, and we became the first recruitment company to focus 100% on Workday.
Mm.
That's all we do. So,
it's clever.
What would I say? What would I say about this business? I would say that we've got two live offices with people, and some satellite locations. And in the UK, we have a Gatwick office and a Liverpool Street office. And I would say that one thing about this business is we tend to hire very similar types of profiles. So people who, everyone's money motivated, of course, who's in recruitment, but we tend to hire people that are not just money motivated, because we're trying to build something where we're giving our customers a fantastic service. And you can earn money in recruitment without giving a fantastic service.
Mm.
So it needs to be about something else.
Tell me, what's the biggest challenge from getting the business where it is right now at 25 billers to 100?
I think the biggest challenge that I've had, so go back one step. So from making it, a one person company to a 25 man company, has been thinking about probably infrastructure.
Yeah.
Infrastructure that was, we just took off from day one. We really did. And when we started focusing on the Workday market, and because we'd already delivered to various companies, we got some very loyal companies, and we obviously go for exclusivity and things like that. I think that that's my track here, DeWalter.
That's okay. I was asking you about the challenges of getting from 30 to 100.
Challenges.
And you said that there was a lot of challenges from getting from like 3 and 4 to getting to where you're at right now.
Yeah. So I think the biggest challenges that I've learned is, number one, if you are someone who always likes to do things properly, so in other words, if you want to sit in front of someone and tell someone something, then you have to deliver on that. And I always like to be treated the way I treat people. And I went into this business thinking that everyone that I would hire would have the same outlook and would treat me how I treat them.
yeah, good luck with that.
And, yeah. And that's
I thought your rec days would have schooled you for that.
Yeah, but it's different, isn't it? You know, as a recruitment to recruitment consultant, you're talking to recruitment consultants who don't turn up to interviews or tell you they're going to do something, they don't do something. But it's different when you're running your business and you're trying to bring someone into your baby, and you sell your vision to someone and they choose to join you over someone else.
Mm.
You think, or I used to think, that, yeah, he or she is all good. They understand my vision. They're going to be trustworthy. They're going to be loyal. They're not going to lie to me. They're going to do the best for my customers or our customers. Everything's going to be good with this person. And that's not the case. And I quickly learned that. and, you know, having some of the things that have happened to me over 3 years, you know, having Walid as a sounding board, otherwise I would have gone mad, seriously, because I've never screwed over any company that I've worked for, never. And I've always, if I'm going to do something, I've always said, this is what I'm going to do to the person who owns the business, because they're the one who took the risk at the start, you know. So I work for you, and if I'm going to do something, like when I went for the interview at CBS Butler, when I was going to leave Mansell, I went in and told Steve Mansell, I'm going to go for an interview.
Yeah.
You know, so he knew. I'm not doing anything behind your back.
Yeah, but you can't expect people to come up and go, hey, Lloyd, I think I might go have a chat with another company. I'm not really going to leave, though. So, good business as usual, you know?
No, I was going to leave. I was going to leave Mansell. I was going to leave. And I said to him, I want to, you know, Steve Mansell, who is one of my best friends today. He is the guy that, you know, in our track days, which you may have seen on LinkedIn and with the Nissan GTR, Steve Mansell is the instructor, so he's the guy who sits in the passenger seat. So we're very good friends. And before I went for that interview, I sat him down and I said, I'm going to leave. I need to go and start my own business at some point, but I want to try and do this somewhere else to prove to myself that I can do it somewhere else. So I'm going to go and see this company.
Is this coming from somebody trying to steal your business in the last 3 years?
No, not at all. I mean, I've had, there are circumstances, yeah, and we're going to that in a moment. But, you know, that's probably the biggest lesson that I learned very, very quickly, that people do not treat you the same way that you treat them.
Yeah.
When you treated other people in the past.
Yeah, but, you know, you're a successful guy, and it's obviously worked out for you being straight and doing that. And those people will probably, the chickens will come home to roost, you know?
Yeah, they do. But it's still, when it happens to you, you know, when you start a recruitment business and you want to build this fantastic monster, as I want to, and, you know, you want it to be really successful, and it's your baby, and you put your house on the line, and your kids
What does that monster look like in the future, though? Like, what? Talk to me about it. Like, you've got a couple of offices, one's in Gatwick and you've got one in London. Are you thinking that you'll have people all over the place? What does it look like?
Yeah, we're going to be an international brand. So we already work in pretty much every single continent. So we made placements in America. We obviously make a lot of placements in Europe. We've made placements in Asia. I think the only area that we've never made any placements with yet is probably the UAE. Everywhere else we've done placements. We've made placements and we've got customers. So I believe that we need to be a local business to all of those regions. So the plan is to have multiple locations across the whole of Europe. Within the next 2 years, we will open up our formal office in the US. We've already opened up Focus Cloud USA, which was about 6 months ago. We're going to be opening up in the US, a formal office, as I said.
Where do you think you're going to go?
Probably Texas.
Yeah, better taxes.
Yeah. Yeah. But we'll go, it doesn't need to be anywhere specific. I'll go where the practice lead wants the business to go. We have a practice lead who runs the US. And we'll work out a location based on where we can get other recruiters and where she wants to take the business.
Yeah, sounds good. I mean, most people seem to want to go to LA, in my experience.
Yeah. LA, why not?
Why not? I had John Gowan from Finley James just before you. And he's got an office in San Francisco and he's opening up one in New York. But he said for everything else, he's going to put them in WeWork stations around America.
Yeah.
So he's got a good grasp of all the different projects going on in different regions, which I thought was really clever.
Yeah, very clever. Yeah. We've got a Regis location in Florida at the moment.
All right, very good.
Yeah, but obviously no one there. So we're dealing with the US from the UK currently, which presents its own problems with time differences.
So, Lloyd, in if we do the an update in 18 months' time? What where do you think you'll be at?
Well, probably out of the Gatwick office because we're bulging at the seams. So I'm actually sitting in my office in Gatwick at the moment. So more than likely we'd have moved from here, I would have thought. I would say that the business is definitely going to be, you know, in 18 months, we're definitely going to be 50 people. I think that we acquired a business as well. So I think there's other recruitment companies out there that could possibly come under the Focus Cloud hat that have the same ethos and want to build the same type of business that we're already building here. Mm. So perhaps they can get to their goals a lot easier.
And would that be using like a broker to keep an eye out for people like that?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. I had a call last week actually. More of an inquiry by someone I know who said, "Do you want to sell your business to this bigger brand?" My company's not for sale. We're not ready. Yet. No, not yet. Yeah.
When you get your right multiple, you'll be off into the sunshine. I bet you.
Well, do you know what we are a really successful business now. So I think if there was a big company that came in and talked to me now, I don't think there's a price. I really don't, and because it's not about money. It's not about money. It's about building a really cool business that's known for delivering quality of service to the customers, and I don't think we've done that yet. So what would be the point in selling it? You know,
to finish up, Lloyd, what's your favorite part about your job now, and what's most of your time spent doing as a business owner?
Well, I'm still very much at the forefront of recruitment, so I still talk to customers and I still talk to candidates, still make placements. I have not lost the love for this game. So even though, you know, I run a business and my role has evolved over the last three years. So, you know, in the first year, I wouldn't say it was anywhere close to what a CEO needs to be. Now I would say I run this business now. So I think I just love recruitment. I love the game. I love the fact that, you know, you call a customer and that customer wants your help, but maybe they don't know that they want your help. And I like the fact that you can impress people, you know. So one of our core values is 24/7 as a business. So that means that we are available for our customers and our candidates 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And it's real, you know. I generally have about 4 hours sleep a night. But if in my 4 hours, one of my customers calls me and needs our help, then I will be there. And that's the same for every single person who works for this business. And it's one of the prerequisites we hire people. So this is what we do. This is our core values. Is that okay? You know, so I think I haven't lost the love of this game. I think, you know, a very small placement of maybe £50 a day or whatever it be, or the highest placement of whatever that might be, it means the same to us. It means the same to me. And one of the things I'm beginning to really like over the last two years or so is finding people who come into this business and seeing them earning lots and lots of money. We have some consultants here who earn a lot of money, and nothing makes me more happy than to sign a very, very high commission check, you know, sometimes double what I earn or what I'd heard is possible in the past.
All right, Lloyd. Thanks very much for coming on and sharing your story.
Oh, you're welcome.
It's really interesting. I love how obsessed you are. I love how intense you are about it. And I think that sets the people who are okay at this apart from the people like you who are going to have massive exits in the future.
Well, thank you. I hope you'll keep your word on that.
All right. Brilliant. We'll talk soon.
Be there. I'm only 40.
You're only yeah. Of course, you're only 40.
Yeah.
4 hours sleep a night, lad.
Yeah, 50 at the moment.
All right. Okay, Lloyd. Talk to you again.
Thanks. Cheers, Walter. Bye.
Well, massive thank you to Lloyd for coming on the podcast. And a really impressive business he has. You know, 25 heads, multi-million pounds of profit, and he's scaling it up. You know, he's got to that magic point of having over 20 billers, and he's confident that he can get to 50 in the next coming years. Now, the challenge for everybody is attracting the talent to get to that point. But one of the things I like that sets his business apart, and I was saying to him this after the podcast, is that with Brexit, people who are working for, say it's Reed or Search or one of the national firms, and you're centered on a localized marketplace, maybe you're doing accountancy or something, when Britain goes into recession, you're going to struggle as a recruiter, and it is no fun recruiting in a recession, whereas his people will be able to recruit anywhere in the world from the comfort of either their home office, because he offers that, and with a few days in the office in Gatwick. So I think he's well positioned to grow over the next few years. And I like the way that they're super niche, in that they're just using one ERP and they're becoming the experts in that space. So every person that comes into their business is helping build that global database and building their brand. And they just get known for moving people from one project to the next. And that's the way that contract recruitment with an ERP works. And what a coincidence that we both work with Shailen Mistry. So shout out to Shailen. You're probably not listening to this because you're enjoying yourself and the sunshine in Australia. Well, I'm miserable here back in the UK. So, yeah, really enjoyed speaking to Lloyd and getting to know his business a little bit better. Again, he direct a wreck for a while and then binned it because he saw there was no future in it. I am jealous hearing about the growth and how it's gone for him. And I really have to go have a good talk with myself and not to get too much recruiter envy about other people's businesses. So we'll be back again tomorrow with another amazing guest. And if you want to come on the podcast and tell your own story, just hit me up on LinkedIn. Or if you're enjoying the podcast, please do reach out to me. And please do rate and subscribe this on iTunes, because some bastard gave it 1 star and it's reduced down to 4.5 out of 5. So anyway, that's it for today. See you next time. Happy hunting.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.